Arizona boasts of many women who've made history both here and on the national stage. We all know the impact that Sandra Day O'Connor and Rose Mofford had here. But what about those who are a little lesser known? Last year, we introduced you to four women who made their mark on our state. And this year, for Women's History Month, we are introducing you to five more Arizona women who helped shape their communities and the state's history as part of our series, Women of the West. To kick off the series, we'll meet Graciela Oliveras. She was the first female disc jockey in Phoenix for a Spanish language station called KIFN. She went on to become the state director of the Office of Economic Opportunity for Arizona, a member of President Lyndon B. Johnson's National Advisory Council, and in 1977, she was appointed by President Jimmy Carter as the director of the Community Services Administration. But she was raised the daughter of a copper miner in a town that doesn't even exist anymore near Superior, Arizona. It was a dramatically segregated community that her family left as World War II broke out and demand for laborers grew in Phoenix. A high school dropout, Oliveras found a path for herself early on as a stenographer, a translator for a real estate agent, and eventually, by 1952, she was hired as a host of her own radio program, Action Line. That's where I'll let Christine Marine and Roberto Ravelas pick up the story. Marine is a professor emeritus at ASU and the founder of the Chicana Chicano Research Collection at Hayden Library. Ravelas is a lifelong civil rights activist who has served as president of the ACLU of Arizona and an aide to Mo Udall in Washington, D.C. He worked with Oliveras during that time, and I spoke with both of them more about her when they came into our studios recently.
She was widely known throughout Maricopa County because KIFN was able to broadcast through many, many places around Central Phoenix, through the migrant camps in North Phoenix, through the migrant camps in Tolleson and Peoria, through the migrant camps in South Phoenix and into South Phoenix. So you had listeners and you had women who were then speaking up with her, for her, and appealing to her, and she was able to hear from them the kinds of problems and difficulties that they were having living a life of poverty. So she was now moving a little bit away from plain Mexican music, talking about recipes and sewing and gardening and those kinds of things. And now she was able to articulate a little bit more.
So it pushed her toward what became the rest of her career sort of as an activist.
She didn't really become a political activist until they fired her.
Doesn't that do it?
The men who controlled KIFN radio station did not like the fact that she was now appealing to women who were speaking up and for themselves.
Yeah.
They wanted her to go back and talk about cooking, go back and play the music, go back and talk about recipes and the kinds of things that women talk about. So when she moved away from those kinds of topics, she then had become known for her political work on the side for the Democratic Party. She then became a friend to the Democrats, the Mexican-American Democrats who are now making edgeway into political avenues and arenas into South Phoenix, Central Phoenix, and Maricopa County.
So fast forward a little bit again, and she ends up in Washington, right, at the nation's capital. Tell us what it is she's doing there.
She is being heard by the Democrats who are very aware of the need for Mexican-American voters. Graciela was doing very, very well as an activist for the political party, moving into communities now to bring in voting rights and abilities for persons to become voters. And the idea was for the Democrats was for these people to vote for the Democratic Party. So now that she was becoming a little bit more known, more active, the National Party was looking at her because now we had President Carter now coming into office in the 70s. He needed someone to represent Arizona in a different way, and he wanted to bring in women, and he did. But he heard about Graciela Oliveras, and he brought her in and appointed her as his first director of the Community Services Administration, which was like a mini war on poverty program.
Right. And this is when you meet her, right, Roberto? You were working on the Hill at the time. What was she like? Do you remember when you first met her?
Yes, I do recall her very fondly as a person who was very much involved in Arizona initially, as Christine has described. And she worked here with Friendly House in South Phoenix. And she would tell me about working with migrant families in particular and how she was trying to inculcate the idea of working with the entire family, not just with the children. She had an office near the airport. I remember visiting her there. And she would describe the humble settings in which she was functioning at the time and how people would come to show appreciation for the work she was doing with them. They'd bring her tortillas, tamales. And that really moved me to see a person of her, by then, in my mind, intellectual stature.
Right, right.
And love for humanity. And so we started to collaborate on activities when she came to Washington. And it was my good fortune to one day, for example, get a call from her. She says, "Roberto, you won't believe what just happened." She says, "I just came out of a meeting with Father Theodore Hesburgh from Notre Dame, who was a chairman of the Civil Rights Commission on which she was serving at the time. And she tells me, he just offered me an opportunity to go to Notre Dame Law School." And I explained to him, "Father, I don't even have a high school diploma." And he had such confidence in her native intelligence that he assured her that she would be able to be a success in school. Her one concern was, how do I leave all of these activities behind that I am so involved in? And I encouraged, I said, "Graciela," I said, "when you complete your law school, and I'm confident you will," I said, "you'll be able to do even more for the community that you're involved with." And so she did,
yeah.
And she went on to become the first woman graduate of Notre Dame Law School.
And this was later in life, like you say.
Yeah.
So it sounds like from what both of you were saying, it's clear that she was dynamic, that she was able to connect with people in a way that was effective, in a real, like, impactful sense. What was it about her that made her so good at that, so good at taking the real issue and delivering it to the people who could make change?
And that's a very good question to ask about her, because one of the things that seared into my memory is how she had the ability to speak bilingually in both English and Spanish. And when she'd get to a certain point, she'd reach into her knowledge of dichos, sayings, proverbs, Mexican proverbs, and she'd describe situations where she'd be confronted with folks that she thought were trying to manipulate her. Pues me están dando atole con el dedo. They're serving me this Mexican beverage of masa and corn. They're trying to mislead me. They're trying to deceive me. Mm-hmm. But she had that capacity in both languages to reach into her memory and pull out these sayings. And I was especially attracted to her use of Mexican proverbs.
I think she had, in my view, I did not meet her personally, but after she passed away, her family donated her archives, her photographs, her writings, her thoughts that she scribbled on paper as she was meeting with someone. While she was the director of the CSA, or the Community Services Administration, she thought that the work that she was doing on behalf of the President of the United States, President Jimmy Carter, was important, because what he was doing was trying to elevate the economic status or the economic position of poor people, of people who had no voice, of minorities who needed education and didn't have access to education. Mm-hmm. And through his poverty programs and through the CSA, Graciela was his voice. In the beginning, she was just a young girl, her humble beginnings, if you want to call them that, the daughter of a copper miner. Because where she traveled and she took notes, so students today can read those things. Women can read what she says. And this is a period of time when women really didn't have a position nationally.
Amazing. So I have one final question for the two of you. What is her legacy, you think, in Arizona? And why isn't she better known, you think?
Here is a person who, despite all of the segregation-imposed barriers, rose above it. And she polished her own personality and intellect to a point where she was, I consider, one of the most effective advocates of that period. And so I think her legacy is one of persistence, one of commitment to working among the people who most need a voice, because she had a wonderful presence, and the resonance of her voice communicated authority.
All right. Mm-hmm. Dr. Christine Marine and Roberto Revelles, thank you so much, both of you, for coming in.
You're welcome.
Thank you.